We don't have a very long presentation. We hope that this will be a forum with a lot of lively exchange from people that are here. There's a great deal of discussion these days about the changing roles of men and women in our society and in church and in marriage and in the family. And frequently, the exploration of these ideas about the expanded or changed roles of men and women can lead to the dissolution of a marriage or the disintegration of a family in some fashion. We would like to pursue that discussion and explore creatively with you this morning the words freedom and liberation as they apply to individuals who have made a marriage commitment, so that the key words are freedom, liberation, as they relate to commitment. Hence the topic of this forum, men and women together and free. Maury and Christine and Norm and I are not marriage counselors, we're not therapists, we're not experts, we're merely two couples who are in the process of exploring what it can mean to be together and to be free. I think what we'll do is give everybody here on the panel time for a statement, personal statement, and then you can address questions to any or all of us relating to those words, freedom, liberation, commitment, togetherness. Maury, you want to start?
Okay. I'm going to talk a little bit about career, because this has been an issue for us in the last year. I recently resigned my position as a professor at Luther College in Saskatchewan because Christine last summer was called to the ministry, and she wanted to study. She couldn't study in Regina, there wasn't any seminary there, and she wanted to study at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. It seemed a logical thing to us, but it was very hard for our family, and hard for our friends even, and my colleagues in Regina to understand. It surprised us what a shock, well, I shouldn't say shock, but how hard a time people had adjusting to this idea. So I was just thinking about our personal history, and I realized it's been part of the development of our lives together from the beginning. Even probably this, the ability to do this is partly because of the era in which I was educated and began my career. I started out with insecurity and with no assurance of a job. Anybody getting a PhD in English these days knows that the chances are minimal that he or she will have a regular teaching position. When I got my PhD, I had no position. I had just met Christine. And so at that time, I decided to go to where she was doing her work at the University of Minnesota, to live in Minneapolis, and then seek a position. 10 years earlier, if I had been my brother's age, I would have had a position, and I would have had something to grapple with then. Would I take the position, or would I go to Minneapolis? But here, I think this is one of the places where grace was operating for me. I didn't have that kind of decision to make. And it turned out, of course, and this is the way it's been for us, I got to Minneapolis, and a job appeared before me. And it was another stroke, I think, of not luck, but grace. So that we began by taking a risk or in a situation of insecurity. Then the next year, Christine completed her studies at Minnesota, and I was offered a job in Saskatchewan. So we went there, and though it looked like a place where Christine would have very little to do, it turned out that there, unlike anywhere we knew of in the United States, she could teach English with her master's degree in English. And so an opportunity opened up for her that hadn't been apparent to us beforehand. Now, after Christine was called to the ministry and decided she wanted to go to the seminary, I suppose that we didn't really ask whether we would move, but when we would move. And it seemed that there was no better time than the present. So I announced my retirement, and Christine fortunately was accepted at seminaries thereafter. And we're moving to St. Paul. But everybody at first thought this was disastrous for my career, the visions that they would have of my career, and that I think most of us would feel comfortable with, would be that I would stay at Luther College for the rest of my life. It's a new institution, it's growing, it was a very friendly place to be, and I loved it there. That's one possibility. Another one is that I stay there for 6 or 7 years, establish my reputation, get tenure, and then get an offer from another school. Then maybe Augsburg College would offer me a job. Then we would be able to come down with some kind of security and pursue the career. But somebody was saying the other day that that God is often present in those times when we are taking risks and working at the kind of fringes of the possibility that we see. So we just took this risk. Not going to an entirely new situation, since 4 years earlier I had gone to Minneapolis with no job and found one. And sure enough, a job was offered me at Gustavus. Now, Gustavus is a long distance from Minneapolis, but it's all right. At any rate, the risk has always been answered by grace, in our experience, and I'm not concerned about failing to have any kind of decent career. I just don't know. I can't see the 40 years down the road yet. Just one thing about visions of the future. There are a couple things that could happen for us. We could kind of go back and forth. Christine has her 4 years at the seminary. I get a job in South Carolina and go there for 4 years, and then Christine gets a call someplace and I go there. That's a possibility. Other visions we've had were that we could both work half-time and be with our family half-time. That seems a kind of ideal for us, and if we could arrange that, that'd be great. A third possibility is that we might be able to have a good job together sometime, which we split. The ways we would do this were more apparent when we were both teaching English, but we can't yet foresee how that might happen.
Christine, would you like
to? Okay, I'll go next. I'm going to talk about the issue of names. I would end up talking about language, but I'm going to talk about naming. And our traditional custom in marriage, the wife assuming the husband's name upon marriage. I didn't do that. I'm Christine Carlson, not Christine Wee. And a lot of people up here have asked me, why did you do that? Why did you keep your name? So I'd like to address that issue for just a few minutes. Our goal when we made our commitment to one another was to stay together and to be married to one another, but to be able to maintain our individuality within that marriage, individuality for both of us. It was important to me to keep my identity, to keep my name going. I had been Christine Carlson for 22 years. People knew me by that. When Christine Carlson, the name was said, an image of a person with characteristics, qualities, ambitions, all of this, was conjured up in people's heads. I often talk about women having to be born again twice, I think. We're born and named at birth and baptism, and then we're born again when we're married, when we assume a new name, and at the age of 20 or 30 start a whole new identity going, the way we did when we were little babies. And this seemed to me to be something that in the middle of a professional life, having established personal relationships by one name, I didn't want to, in midstream, have to change all of that. One question that I ask when people ask me why I did this, or one issue I bring up, is to ask men how they would feel at the age of 20 or 30 changing their name, becoming unknown in certain ways, losing part of their identity, and having at the age of 20 or 30 to establish a new one. It's a very rugged thing to do, I think. I also saw name changing as related to the social attitude that women belong to men, that I take the name of my father, and that's my name for 20 or 30 years, then I'm passed in the marriage ceremony to my husband, and I take his name for the rest of my life. this naming, and the fact that the names that women possess are given to them by men is a sexist practice in our society, I think, and one that cheats women out of naming ourselves, first of all, and out of maintaining this consistent identity throughout our whole lives. Men are born with the name that they die with. Women are back and forth. Names aren't certain for them. And it makes them less whole people, I think. The other thing about names in our society, I think, is the custom of calling women, someone like me, for instance, Mrs. Morris Wee. And I think that that's a terrible practice. Where am I as a woman in that title? I'm maybe in the Mrs., but what name do I have in that name? And part of what I was doing was trying to challenge that practice. If I'm Christine Carlson, I have my name all the time. And so that was important to me. The ironic thing to me in all of it is that the name that I kept was, of course, my father's name. And it's a name like Carl's son, which is son of Carl. It's a very male Norwegian name. But it is my family name, and it was my name for 21 years, and I hope until I die. So, Mary?
On the other hand, Wee is such a funny name. I grew up with that name, so I can speak for that.
You wanted to change, huh?
I like no. Mary Maxwell better in terms of sound, and they were always calling me Wee Mary Wee when I was a little kid. 20 years of that to live down, see?
Yeah. Well, I think there's an advantage with Wee. You don't have so much name to write.
Yeah, that's right. It's shorter. They have a cousin whose name is Paul Wee. Pee-wee. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, maybe I'll take the next turn so I can't be accused of having the last word.
After you, dear.
All right. Norm and I have kind of come to this discussion a little later in life than Christine and Maury have, because we are not starting out our married life together making plans for when we will do this and when we will do that. I went back to work. I went back to teaching full time, partly out of the need to go back to my career, which I had indeed began before I married Norm, and also partly out of financial necessity. We have three children. We have tuitions to pay, braces on teeth, music lessons, and all the obligations that go with rearing a family. And in recent years, it has become very evident to me that I have pursued my career largely lately out of my need to hold the family together and pursue economic goals and family goals that are not fulfilling to me. And so we've done a lot of talking about changes in our lifestyle, changes in our positions, in the way we earn money, in the way we operate our family, to enable me to pursue that more. That's it in a nutshell. I think maybe many women find themselves in that position today. That's my theory.
I thought I would just briefly deal with the need for men to be liberated. One of the things I think we discovered with when whites got involved with the civil rights movement was that there was talk, well, you know, blacks should get what whites have, and it began to occur to many of us that that may not all be desirable. Some of the things that white society is doing, I wouldn't wish on the black community, and that they ought not to follow. In fact, one of the real dangers in the civil rights movement is that the black community apes the white community, mimics it, does what the white community does, and there are many hazards to that. I have discovered, I believe, over the years, that I suffer, and I think many men that I see suffer from the male image that we have had to bear. It is generally thought that we men are getting our will over the women, and we then are in the driver's seat and everything is just fine for us. It is the women who are oppressed. But I would like to just throw out the claim that men are oppressed. If we are the guilty ones in the male chauvinism, we also suffer from the very dynamics by which we oppress women. And I think it's a subtle thing. I don't think it's so overtly obvious. I don't think I, you know, as a, if there's some Christian gentility in my soul, I don't think I would, you know, openly be against seeing my wife or my family do what they need to do in an obvious and crass sense. I don't need to stand up and dictate orders to everybody in the family. But I think it's more subtle than that. And I would just kind of locate the problem that men have in being liberated in something like this. We have been, by being told that we always must be strong, we can neither be strong nor weak. And one who cannot be weak cannot be strong. By that I mean to say, if you have to bear, if you carry in your psyche, in your emotional makeup, the idea that you have to be strong for other people at all times, that will mean that you cannot be honest about your emotions. You cannot be weak. It's well known that men are not to cry. But that's just a more overt and obvious form of repressing feeling and emotion. Men are not to express emotional need or say, I have need for someone's love and affection and support. Rather, the role of men is always to give love, affection, and support. And I think what happens if you live with that kind of a dynamic, you are not able then to be weak for anybody, and in the process, you cannot really be strong for anybody. Because a person, you have not been able to take stock of yourself. You don't know what your emotions are about. If you're unable to express them or afraid of them, you eventually become, I think, afraid of expressing the emotion and feeling. And it's all of those traits which we have traditionally dubbed as the feminine traits. I mean emotionally feminine traits. The ability to be warm, the ability to be honest about your feelings, to be open. Those are the things that I think we men have probably missed out on in one way or another because we were told that we must not do that. And I would like to just posit that it is not simply a question of women's liberation. It is a question of how, of men and women's liberation. And until men are liberated, women won't be liberated, or until women are liberated, men won't be liberated. Unless we want to play a game of Reuben and Rachel, all the boys go in one place and the girls another, and we'll just sort of fight it out. But if we are to live together, it is a problem of human liberation, male and female. And I feel this very strongly, and somehow or other, in the process of recognizing Judy's need to be everything that she wants to be and needs to be, I become more liberated. I really believe that's so. I guess it's related also to the idea that men must compete and succeed in a competitive process. Success is a competitive process. By competing in some area that I become an expert, I kind of crawl over the backs of others to some kind of position of authority or expertise. And that view of vocation is very damaging. And if it is related to the idea that that is the male position, and one must never show weakness when you're competing. If you're running a race, you don't tell a guy next to you, "I think my leg's getting sore." So there's a lack of honesty in it. That would be my contribution to this discussion.
Okay, I think maybe these are four very different kinds of statements from four individuals. I would like to open up the floor for discussion.
Well, I was the original American, the Indian that was that possessed this land before the white man came. The male wasn't the laborer of the family; it was the female that did all the work. The male, all he did was go out and hunt and fish and enjoy himself. Now we reversed that role and so to speak, when the white man came or the black man, I think that they were assumed the responsibility of providing for the family in a sense. Now I don't know why that should have been, but why didn't we follow the example of the original American Indian?
Yeah, but see, we were Europeans, and the Europeans had the other system.
That's right.
And we just imported the European system.
But why couldn't we have started out with being a little bit more moderate moderate?
Because the Indians never knew the Bible, and they didn't have the old-fashioned view about divine order and submission. Ephesians 5:22 and all that stuff, and so that's the bag that we were in from the very beginning here. And you forgot to say the word kill when you mentioned what the Indian men did.
Forgot kill. To say the word what?
You said hunt and fish and things, and they also killed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which I think should be put in. And that therefore the model of the Indian simply didn't fit our values that we brought along, because ours had been shaped from the very beginning through Christendom, and really from Paul. And it's interesting because the last year I was in the third world, or mostly in Thailand, and it's the same situation there. The women do all the work, and the men just sit around and smoke and loaf and seem to enjoy themselves immensely. And it is a terribly poor and unjust and unfair kind of society.
What about Abraham in his time?
Yeah,
weren't the women also quite overburdened with?
Yes, but you see, I don't want to do all the talking.
I just wanted to comment about these ideas. I don't think that we'd be improving matters if we shifted roles so that the women went out and did all the work and the men tended the children and washed the laundry.
I think they could have made it 50-50.
Tending the laundry and stuff, you don't say that's work, that is work.
Certainly it is, yeah.
That's one thing,
but
it's in our psyche that you shouldn't get past there's work.
Anxiety.
More than one kind of work. It's not
yeah.
There's some anxiety in the back there.
Okay, someone had a comment.
He made the comment that when you're running a race, you don't tell the person next to you that you are that your leg's getting tired. But see, it should be okay to say, I don't care if I win, and that doesn't mean I'm going to lose. Does that make any sense? In other words, you don't have to win, and that doesn't automatically mean that you've lost. If you are... If you can feel free to tell that person that you're not, maybe they'll help you. If you aren't going to be able to make it alone, maybe they'll help you. If you just let them know that you need help, and that's what's missing.
All right, I think what Norm was saying is that the ability to admit that and to say that is absent in our stereotype of male response, emotional response. I don't know who was first here. You want
to? You see, in our society, we have to bring home trophies. And what's happening with women working too is that they feel they have to bring home trophies too.
So that the women are getting the same physical problems and what have you that the men had before, heart attacks and ulcers,
right?
Competition
and
totally
they need strokes.
Why shouldn't they share that with us?
Okay, right. I think you had a question or comment. Yeah.
All right, I'd like to have Christine speak to naming a child should you encounter this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've talked about that a lot. Maury at first suggested that we should name him Carlson since we is such a hilarious name.
She speaks at it at him.
You said him?
Caught in my own trap. We've thought about it, and I think that what we'll do is name the child Carlson-we and hyphenate the name. And then the next question is, well, what will they do when they meet and marry someone whose hyphenated last name is Smith-Jones? And then you end up with Carlson Lee Smith-Jones. But the important thing to me is that people feel that their names identify them, and that I don't know what's going to happen when my children grow up, but that is something that will evolve. And I don't think that that I should be prevented from doing something now that's necessary for me, because 100 years from now there might be a problem, but there might not be.
And people have been living with hyphenated names.
Yeah, in France they do it a lot, and I don't think, I trust that they'll be intelligent enough to come up with a solution.
On that, one more.
Okay. I was really interested in what Maury was talking about in careers, because our family is going through this right now at a different age than you are, and a couple of things surprised me. One is that I would have thought that the people your age would be more flexible and tolerant and so forth. You mentioned that, you know, family and personality could be any age, but friends found this a little bit, you know, difficult and so forth. And we've been doing some of the same thing in the 40s. My husband is going to be switching careers slightly. Part of what he's doing is taking what would be traditionally considered a step down, which is not, you know, where people say that's not what you do in American society, you know, you keep going up. And he doesn't want to go up, and he doesn't want to stay where he is. He wants to do something different, which is, you know, fine with both of us. And so we got to the process of looking for a job and telling our friends and family about what we were doing with some fear and trepidation. And it's been very interesting, really, for us to observe how our friends have reacted. Basically, we thought they would be rather scandalized, you know, when you're in your mid-40s and you're settled and your kids are going to go to college and, you know, your braces and all the things you were talking about. You don't, you know, do all these things. And yet, surprisingly, we found that a lot of our friends are basically jealous. You know, they sort of say, you're lucky. Well, they can do it too, but they don't take the risk. And I don't know what makes people take risks. I don't know, that would be an interesting thing. I mean, I don't know why some people grow up feeling like it's okay to take risks and other people don't.
Can I ask you a question along those lines?
Yeah.
What do you think is the difference between a family that are a husband and a wife that gets together and agrees to take these risks together? What's the ingredient there, as opposed to the family that breaks up as a result of this, which also frequently takes place when one partner or the other feels the tension, the frustration of not being able to make this change, men as well as women, that they feel is necessary, and then things explode over that. What is the ingredient, do you think?
I don't know if I can tell you that magic ingredient, but you know there is something there that that either way, you know, either it works or it doesn't work, and it certainly doesn't work if they don't get together. You know, mm-hmm. if one of them makes a decision, we're going to do this different thing than the other.
That's what I'm trying to focus on. Yeah. How the commitment can remain, and the freedom can go.
We did the same thing. This turnaround is, I say we, because I feel very involved in whatever my husband does. He went from being a lawyer after practicing law for 17 years, went to seminary, and is now in his 13th year of being a minister. Mm-hmm. I had always been a very active laywoman, which I continue to do. I don't like being pastor's wife as much as I like being named the laywoman. Mm-hmm. But I can be very open and say this. The ingredient, your question was, the ingredient that makes it work is the caring that was there before the subject ever came up, mm-hmm. I think. I feel that if I had not wanted to go through the transition period that it takes to go from one career to another and a step down, like you say, like I can remember going to the orthodontist and saying, don't worry, we've included you in our will. You'll eventually be paid, but not at the rate that you've been paid in the past. And this didn't bother me at all to say it. But I really feel that if I had said, I can't handle this, it's not something that I can go along with, I think his career might have taken a different way, because he would not have put me into a situation that wouldn't have made me feel good. And mm-hmm. I think that's the ingredient, is the caring that was there before the subject ever came.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say,
right, for now, yeah.
I was going to say the same thing, a communication, because I know when we, at first in our marriage, we didn't have it quite, we still don't have it all the time, but I mean, like the last move we made, our whole family sat down.
Mm-hmm.
And decide that you would be willing to do it. Whereas sometimes that wasn't true earlier in our marriage.
Right.
And then you feel, you get this feeling that you've been manipulated into this. And it's also, it's bad for the other partner too, because then you can pass on, well, it's your fault, I'm, you know, I'm here. This kind of, which is really a neat weapon also to handle on. That way you can't really blame anyone but yourself either. You don't like how it turns out, or you do fine. But I mean, you're in it together.
You're in it together.
You don't feel like one person is so, is saying this is what we're going to do.
Okay. Somebody over here wanted to think.
But still what's happening is that all women who are talking about men have changed careers except for your situation, which indicates to me that women, because of their more supportive roles, are more willing to
support their husbands in that need to change.
Because they see that misery that he's encountering, and they feel that they can cope more readily.
There's also, I think, another big one. I was offered a career. I could have moved with my career this time. But it doesn't pay enough money for me to move. I mean, basically, we couldn't support a family.
Back here with somebody that had something.
I just wanted to say, I was miserable in my role.
That's why.
So it was a relief to you.
Yes.
So it was a career change for you.
Yes, it really was.
Were you miserable?
No, I was not a very strong person. I don't know how to say this very well. I did not have the background to be a socially prominent, the wife of a socially prominent lawyer. And my husband's partner's wife put me into a mold and would not, I felt lots of pressures from this older couple that were the partner and his wife. My husband didn't put those pressures on me, but I couldn't accept that. I had to go to one step higher, to the authority figure of the older partner, and the pressure, the mold that she put me in, comments like, for us, we never wear basic black. She didn't like my clothes. We had to go to San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. She said the little string of pearls and the little scarf and the little pin just isn't for us. So I had to cash a life insurance policy, go to San Francisco, and blow in the early 1940s. Blow $125 and come home with one dress, one hat. I ducked out of shoes because I knew there wasn't the money for those. And she kept saying, but we don't have the jewelry and the purse and the earrings. You know, the whole, every outfit had to be complete. That kind of life, I was very, very uncomfortable.
Well, do you feel that if you had initiated the need for a major change in your lifestyle, a career change, that your husband would have followed you in that? In other words, if you would have said,
"I feel my husband was.
I need for us to do something different, or I need something different."
Right.
Would he have made the adjustment logically, following after the way you did after him? You're absolutely right in pointing out that it is mostly women in the room who are saying that they supported a husband's career change.
Yes, but isn't that where our society is?
Yeah.
Well, that is where our society is.
We are part of a society in which we are born. We are part of the society by accident of birth. We live with the fears and the molds of our parents. I myself am considered a child of the Depression. Many of my events in later life are results of that.
Of that conditioning.
Not as a result of. Certainly my children grew up in a different atmosphere. Many of the things they had because I was deprived of them, and I was bent that they were not going to be. I'm not sure it was good for my children at this point. But I think this is one of the things that I have trouble with in the addressing of a changing lifestyle. I don't think we are talking about, in many cases, changing lifestyles. Chris, what happened to Chris Carlson Wee? That was the way we perpetuated the family name. The female dropped her second giving name to
took on the name of the husband and took her father's name as her second name. It perpetuated that. And that's the way the society... Many things we do because that's the way they trace you in law. That's the way they trace you in the society.
Well, they can trace men that way. But try tracing a woman. Like my... Oh. I can trace back to my grandmother, and I can trace back to my great-great-great-grandfather. But the grandmothers get lost.
Well, I would have to argue if you attempted to trace, and if the family had followed the society practice of the wife using her father's name, you would have no difficulty in making that tracing back. And the people who study genealogy can show you that. They go repeatedly right back either side of the family in the genealogy tree.
But the woman dropped the father's name and the wife's different.
Well, as I say, if they follow the practice, if it is the maternal side that you wish to trace, if that is the thing that we are attempting to do, it can be done. And it can be done just as strong, and may I suggest that 50 or 100 years from now, someone may have trouble tracing either side of a family that adopts the lifestyle of two names, either hyphenated or not hyphenated. And I have no personal bent against the individual that wants to do this. We're children of God, and we do the things in which we're comfortable. But we do live in somewhat of an ordered society. And I think one of the things that is disturbing is not the release of the individual to live in that ordered society, but where the people are fighting that part of the order that gives them that freedom. So I'm really on the other side of the fence with many of the fringes of it. I hold out very strongly for style we have today where the minister in a church need not be male or female, maybe either. Now, I thank God for those kind of changes. And the fact that we have the freedom to choose an occupation, and no longer is that occupation sexually oriented. No, it's not sexist oriented. There are no male occupations, there are no female occupations. There are occupations by which people bring their talents and produce. But why do we destroy the fabric of our society in which these things go? That's the part that bothers me.
May I ask, you used the words destroy the part of society that gives you your freedom. I'm not quite sure what you meant by that.
Nothing can be worse than to live in the chaos of totally unstructured society. It is regressive.
Part of what I'm trying to challenge is the whole custom of the male name being perpetuated. Even if my name is Christine Carlson Wee, it's my father's name that's being perpetuated. And what I'm hoping to see emerge eventually...
My name is being perpetuated.
And your name, yeah. As what I'm hoping to see eventually is a different way of naming come about, rather than using patronymy. The male name.
You would prefer the matriarchal society then, I would say.
No, I don't want it to be exclusive. I don't want it to be either, just the woman's or just the man's. I want something that
is inclusive. Prefer the order that the Spanish-speaking countries go, in which your name would be Carlson E. Wee.
No, I don't prefer that, because the Carlson is my father's name.
Then what name would you like
only,
to
not my
your
mother's? No, what I'm hoping will emerge is, and I don't know what kind of system it will be yet, but some way that that the male and female lines can be maintained in a name.
Well, they do that in the Spanish society by taking both.
They take two male names.
Yeah. Her name, well, the her father's
her,
name.
Her father's
name.
Her
yeah,
I think back, yeah, in the way in the back, you were next. Yeah.
Yeah, in terms of this naming, naming a child, baptism, for example, I've been a little bit confused as to whether the parents really intend the Carlson Wee or Wee Carlson. What about that? That injects just a little bit more chaos in a way.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
I believe the name that's given in baptism is your given name, not the family name.
Depending on what the parents' intent is.
Well, okay, I'm all for the right of parents to do what they want to do in that, but the intention is that your first name is what's being given you in baptism.
Yes, right.
That's individual.
But,
it isn't
but
your
then,
family being baptized.
Right,
too.
But we usually relate the full name.
You wouldn't have to.
No, you wouldn't have to, but I think that is the intent of parents, to give the full name. Legally, what is the intent? Is it Carlson, are we Carlson? I'd like to hear Christine's view on that, if there is any preference.
I don't understand the question. Which, do you want to know which one we're going to name our children?
Well,
you put a female name ahead of
them. Yeah, why? Which one would you prefer first?
Yeah. It's like you'd almost have to put one on top of the other.
And when we talk about
generation, how does that go in an ordered society?
We haven't addressed that question, I don't think.
Do it alphabetically.
Roy? Alphabetically.
My only thing is that I hope we get into some other discussion.
Yeah. Right. I was just about to change it.
I really feel Chris can deal with the name. You have priorities. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine to have a priority. It's more important to deal with where my name is than to worry about how it's going to be traced. Mm-hmm. If I'm worried about how it's going to be traced, then I'll do some other things. But you got to choose. You take your priority. And I'd like to hear about the name, but I don't want us to solve
no.
it.
Right.
I don't either.
Did you have something else you wanted to bring up at this point?
I
was going to throw out one other thing. Comparing Morris and Christine to Norman and myself, today, it what you said about being conditioned by society is very true. When Norman and I married, we didn't really give too much consideration to the possibility that maybe we would not have children, or that maybe we would work in his field for a year and he would pursue his career and I would work in mine and pursue mine then for four more years, and that we would schedule things that way. Today's couples, when they marry and make the commitment to each other, are really much more in a position, partly because of the conditioning of society. Society is allowing this kind of dialogue to go on without condemning the process of making these kinds of negotiations. And I guess personally, I feel a bit envious of you starting out now being able to discuss those things. I do not regret having children. I have three beautiful daughters. I would not have changed things, go back on things at all. But there is a certain wistfulness with which I look at the way you two have been able to start out and negotiate about how we plot things for the future. Maybe we could turn the conversation to that just a little bit. Vernette?
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with you, Judith. When I got married, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you, I assumed children.
You assumed it,
right. I didn't get married until I decided I was ready to have children, basically.
Right.
I thought I was ready. Anyway.
Right. I thought I was ready.
No, but you assumed you were going to have them, right?
Right.
That was part of it. And a lot of that has been with the birth of the pill and a few other
right.
things.
Right, and I think that we were discussing this on the trail with Mary and Ken yesterday, that a lot of couples in our age bracket are experiencing divorce and turmoil, separation, all kinds of conflict, and we were trying to discover why it is that at this particular age bracket there is a rash of this kind of thing. Now maybe this isn't, Will, did you have a clue or do you have some good statistics or something?
I had to step out for a moment.
Oh, and we changed topics.
Yeah, and so I was still going to say something about the name game.
Oh, okay.
I was just going to say
too late.
Humorous.
Humorous.
Something funny. Like
something that. Funny.
Yeah, I thought about destroying the order of my family by changing my name to Wilhelm von X.
Funny.
Because Hertzfeld is a slave name. Mm-hmm. And then I discovered that Hertzfeld field of hearts and decide what's in the name unless you can trace those kinds of meanings and implications.
You could. Maybe we could all adopt new ways of naming
ourselves.
A lot
of my friends have names like Ufon DC. Mm-hmm.
Kunta Kinte.
Yeah. Yes.
Back to the issue that you were bringing up, and I still am not ready to name that magic ingredient, but I feel very strong. I mean, I look with some envy also on people who are, you know, doing what they're doing, but I don't really feel too envious because I feel like, in fact, I can do the same thing, and I am doing it and have done it for some time. And I think that that is, in fact, what has happened to a certain number of couples, and it hasn't worked. And maybe part of it is what we talked about. Somebody mentioned a while ago that women were saying that they supported husbands' change, and some do and some don't. One, I think, is if a woman really wants to support it, and, you know, she doesn't, has no problem with that, and it's just the submissive thing, that's all right with me. I won't even tangle with that if she's happy with it. And if she isn't happy with it, it's not going to work. And I think that, in fact, a husband can change, and it also means career change for a woman. Certainly in our case, you know, it was a real balance. It wasn't just, he was trying to decide what to do different. It was, you know, it was a package deal. We looked at it, we looked at town, and said, you know, will there be a job for you there? There was one town we absolutely ruled out because there probably wouldn't be a job for me there. We also approached, we're both in the same field, we're both in social work. In the place we are now, I can't work in the place my husband is working. We didn't know that when we moved there. A job came up that would have been super for me. I would love to have had it. He would love to have had me have it. They wouldn't let me do it because I was his wife. I was furious. I even went to the Civil Rights Commission about it, but it didn't do any good. But anyway, so we decided the next time we move, we will check that out in advance, which we did. And every place he interviewed for a job, he said, what if my wife would like to work for the same place? Would you consider hiring her? One person said, no, I'm afraid we can't consider that. And I did it. I mean, he wouldn't take that job. And the other two places said yes, you know. But I think these are things we have to, you know, that people have to be thinking about. I think, you know, that the people in their 40s, I mean, you hear it all the time, people are switching careers. I think we're going to see more and more of it. We're going to see a lot of people switching in their 40s and didn't think about it when they got married in their 20s. And it will be an upheaval if the two people aren't, you know, in it together.
Aren't tuned in together.
Yeah, tuned to each other. You know, what's good for you and what's good for you, not just what's good for one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Christine, were you going to respond to that?
Well, I was just going to say that I think that our whole idea of success is going to have to change then, because I think that what has made successful lawyers or executives or that male model of this, you know, successful male earning $150,000 or plus a year, things like that, has demanded a family system at home willing to submit themselves to whatever moves he has to make, to wherever he has to go. And I think that our ideas that success means this job and a lot of money is going to have to change, because if you're trying to balance out two careers, you know, the best job for your husband to take might have been that one where they wouldn't hire you.
That's
but because
right.
they wouldn't, he wouldn't
when
take it.
When you say
it.
Best job, you mean financially best.
Yeah, and so he compromised and is maybe not going to move up in the way that we have expected people to move up in the past.
I want to say something. I'm trapped on the success bag because you want to do your best for your children, and one way you can do that is to send them to the very best schools. And we just got our tuition bill from Yale, and I'll be damned if I know how I'm going to pay it, but I have to find a way to do it because the boy can do it, and he should go to Yale. So I have to work as hard as I can.
There is a third ingredient of children in the situation, and you may not be able to take a job you would like to take because it doesn't pay enough to do those.
I would love to take off. You know, we're teachers, and you know, the three reasons we're going into teaching are June, July, and August. And I, you know, love to take off creative summers. You know, togetherness and camping and the whole business and everything else. You know, and just let it go and struggle through and then have them wind up, you know, at some teacher's college or something else like that. But they're better than that, and they deserve more than that. And the way you can get them into Yale is to be able to pay for it. And to be able to buy things that don't wear out the first year. Cars and clothes and houses and good furnaces and all the rest. And you get caught up in that rat race, and I haven't found a way out of it. And my wife is in the same situation, and she likes her $19,000 a year job very much. And she wants to quit, and she's having some problems, and she can't quit because we're in so deep that we can't get out of it. And she went into it because she really believes in the women's movement, and she teaches at a college where there are, of a faculty of 68, there are three women. And so she's a great crusader, and I, you know, support her 100% on that. But, you know, it isn't that simple. And
right.
What I know is right here, you're at the beginning, you're in the middle, and we're sort of at the end, because
right.
the nest is empty now. And,
right.
Well,
that's why we asked Maureen and Christine to be with us on this, because
yeah.
it represents different stages of this dialogue.
And I'm not ready to throw off success and so that we can all go living in a tent for 3 months in the summer and, you know, relate.
Right. Right. Way in the back. I think you've been...
Well, I'm all for sexual equality, but I have one very overriding concern. What happens to children?
Right.
What a male is a professional, a physician, for example. A wife is also a physician. You both have long hours. Who takes care of the kids? What happens to kids? I mean, my kids don't sit up to me as it is. Now, my wife, we're in the same profession all the time. They would identify with whom? The babysitter? I think this creates a tremendous amount of tension in the children, a lot of anxiety, and I'm very concerned about this the welfare of the child.
Anybody got any practical... Okay, when I went back to work, three times in a row, I had a two-year-old child, and in general, we had child care. That made it work. I don't think that our children, any of them, has suffered because I have worked outside the home full time. Between hired help and the two of us working out and negotiating and handling that kind of thing, I think that it has worked out very beautifully.
That may be true of your
Norm maybe has his viewpoint to respond to.
Well, that is what Mark said. That may be true of your family, but it's certainly mm-hmm. true of some of the ones I have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I have many statistics I can pull, but it's certainly a very overriding concern of mine.
Well, I think it can be done.
What has to be dealt with, and you're an MD, right?
Yes.
And to be rather direct about it, the MD is very much that position is a structured male position presuming a wife at home to take care of the family. In other words, it's a tremendous demand on your time, as I understand MDs and their life. Probably what this would require would be a restructuring of the understanding of what it means to be an MD. That you would have to say, I'm not going to work 70 hours a week, you know, but we're going to have a little bit more equal time in the home, and you would just simply not, you would share both home and work a little bit more. I don't know whether your profession would allow it. You know, can you go anywhere working a 50-hour week instead of a 70-hour week in as an MD?
My response is very difficult.
Yeah.
I think a few people have been able to do it, but it's extremely difficult. My other comment would be, I know of other situations where we're not talking about a medical physician, but maybe, for example, they're even a non-professional, both parents work. And I think it's a tremendous strain on the kids. You know, mom and dad are gone, the kids that come home from school at night, who's to tell them what they can or cannot do, who's to structure themselves in the ways which are in their best keeping. And I see situations which really are sad, and I'm very concerned about them.
The other minority.
Yeah. Okay.
I guess I'm wondering why you don't think of being a mother as a vocation. And if you choose to be a physician, a woman physician, maybe that should be, if you can't wait until after your children are grown, maybe then you should not choose to have two vocations and be both a mother and a physician. Because I think it definitely affects our children.
Maury, you want to respond to that?
I just want to say that nobody has ever asked or accused fathers of not taking seriously that role and taking a full-time job as a physician when they also had a full-time job as a father. Because I think that raising of children ought to be, can be, shared by husband and wife. And that, you know, if we have children, I'm going to have some responsibilities as a husband and as a father and possibly as a wage earner or something. And it's possible, certainly, for a man to do that, and I think it's possible for a woman to do it. You certainly have to make some sacrifices. Maybe one sacrifice is insisting on part-time work, even, if it means a full-time job doesn't leave you enough time with the children. But I think the problem is not necessarily merely that two people in the family are working, but they may not be seriously considering what their commitment should be to the children. I don't think there's any reason the one excludes.
Yeah, I think Mary and then here and then there. Mary?
My suggestion is to have another hour to talk about coping strategies for this very thing.
For that very thing. That would be a very good idea.
Yeah.
We can schedule one. Yes?
I think as Christians we need to face this unemployment, the people that are unemployed, and whether from whichever angle we're thinking. And it just seems to me that this idea of working half-time is an important angle, because if we're taking, whether we're a man or a woman, if we're taking a job away from someone else and having two people working in a family, why, this is something that we need to face up to. And it is a matter of making a large, having a large income if you're, if two people in a profession are working. And then maybe someone else isn't employed at all. So it just seems to me where you have a family, if you are going to each one work, you should, as a Christian, consider this angle of employment for all people. I'm sure that the blacks have a real problem there.
Okay, next.
I've been a kindergarten teacher for a quarter of a century, and I definitely see a bearing on both parents working. I see things that parents don't see. And I really see it. Not in all cases, but in most.
In most, what you mean a negative? You see something
that
negative?
The children have missed out on not having mother in the home
if you'd use the word parent, I think it would be more helpful. Okay, in the back.
This is in response to the comment about unemployment. There is one other option open to women, and I think a true women's liberation is not proven going to agree with this, but there is the volunteer sector. You can have a career that's non-paying.
Sure.
And therefore, you will have your own fulfillment. You are giving to the community, but you're not taking funds out of the community that could be used for someone else.
That's been well taken.
For a long time.
I don't think a feminist.
Okay, I think. Do you want to go next?
Yeah, just briefly. My wife had a career for 27 years as a homemaker.
Right.
And after our children were both grown and married, moved away, she decided that to fill time that she needed to work part-time at least. She got a job and it lasted, 2 months? But it so interfered with the other things that she was doing, committed to and all, that she quit working, outside the home. So therefore, there's this aspect, I think, that we need to really consider homemaker as a career.
Okay, right. I don't mean to imply by any manner
that nothing in the discussion
yes,
that it's
women who decide to remain in the home as their full-time career, if it is a fulfilling, enriching thing, and they're happy doing that, that's fine. Then that is male-female working together, in full partnership. I don't have any problem with that. But the problem of two working parents is so prevalent today, and the working out of those kinds of things, that's why I bang on that. I think you were next.
Well, I think we just heard the other night the discussion by Nuss and Up, and I'm really wondering that under extenuating circumstances where the child wants to go to Yale, and I can see where that would cause quite a little problem with the bank book, I really can't see the need for all this generation of income if we're trying to have a more simpler lifestyle. We don't need the microwave oven with this.
Morris, you want to respond to that?
I don't think any of us are interested in generating more income. That's not what we're talking about.
Right. We're certainly not talking about that with two people having
hard time. Which is going to take the job away from somebody else, as has been brought up here just a moment ago.
Morris and Christine just proposed sharing a job. Husband and wife each doing part of one whole
job. We would like to work half-time each, or share a job. There's plenty of income in that, and enough time for the family, for both of us. That's what we'd like, ideally. I think it would be great if the society would change a little bit. You're all going to say, but you can't do that. You can't have a job as a doctor half-time. But I think it would be good if the society would adjust to that and start making options available to people.
I know of a doctor couple, a husband and wife, who are both MDs, and they I don't know if his practice is full-time or not, but her practice is part-time. She happens to be my doctor. They have had children. Their hours are arranged so that they cover the family scene, the two of them, and it works out very well. Now, I don't think either one of them is working this, you know, 70-hour-a-week kind of thing that doctors can get into. But there are many types of vocations in society today that can be shared, I think, by couples. No, they're all
there,
kinds of hands.
This woman has had her hand.
Yes, I think you have had her.
Okay. That sounds good. Both husband and wife are in the same profession.
Right.
aren't doing the same thing. So very many employers will hire a man part-time, mm-hmm. half-time, I don't think.
That's a change I'd like to see. That's one of the
changes.
Yeah. Okay.
All of these changes are taking time.
I think you were next, Mitch.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, agreeing with Morris and Christine, that I think it's really important that men be given an opportunity to work half-time. And like you said, it's a change that hopefully society will make, so that men can be equal partners in being fathers, as well as raising their children, as well as the mothers. And being homemakers. There's no reason men can't take half-time to be at home and doing the work at the home.
Or other things that they may be interested in, like you talked about the volunteer sector. Maybe some men would like to do things other than the job that pays them money, too, with the free time that would generate. Yeah. Yes.
This is, incidentally, I think, an important aspect of what Norm's comments about the, the need for men to be liberated. One of the deprivations of men in the kind of structures we've had is that they haven't been able to spend very much time with young children. And I think there are some ways around that.
Okay, I think maybe we have time for about two more comments. You had your hand up. And
I would just like to say that I think a conversation like this is of tremendous importance. We have an acquaintance. He's been a minister all his life, and when he received a new call last year, his wife said she had begun to get herself established in her field in the community where they were, and she felt that he was going to be retiring, and he did not want to retire. He felt that he did not want to live on the income that he would receive as a retired pastor, and he wanted to accept this second call, which he did, or this last call, which he did, and she said, I can't follow you anymore. This was a good marriage, but she really felt the need to find herself in her line. So she did not go with him, but it's been very sad. She's starting too late into her field and she's not able to get anywhere. She cannot support herself. They can't maintain the two separate households. And so now she has given up and has joined him. And I'm sure that he is thrilled to death because he missed her support terribly. He'd had it for all this time. But she is feeling very defeated because she could not make it on her own. But the generations coming up aren't going to have to deal with that in the late 50s and 60s. You will have dealt with it in the early years. And I think that's fantastic. I just really like this, getting it out at a younger age.
Okay.
I think when you talk in the professions, it's very easy to talk about splitting a career. But when you get down into the trades, I'm an employer in my present work. And I have over 400 employees. And if they work half-time, they get no employee benefits. They only get the hourly salary. Mm-hmm. And believe me, you are talking about some very difficult things in the society when they earn no vacation, they earn no health insurance, medical benefits, and so on and so forth. Now, I know you're going to say, why can't they? I'll tell you why they can't. My minimum wage is $2.60 an hour on the floor. That cost me $4.15 an hour in fringe benefits. When all the fringe benefits are added to the floor wage on my full-time employees, because of that, I have only 65 full-time employees, and everybody else I hire are hired at the entry level, and I try to hire part-time employees. As an employer, I save a tremendous amount of dollars per hour, which I pass right back to the customer. It's not to increase the profit range, because in the business I'm in, I have to make 5%, no more, no less, because I'm in a government institution. But, so everything I save in employee costs is a savings to the people who are buying from me. But believe me, we have enough social welfare that we cannot add fringe benefits to part-time employment, because that is social welfare, and it continues in the same vein.
Okay, I think our time is about up. Can you give us
The other aspect of people who are in trade is that some are more dexterous, some are more capable of satisfying a need than someone else who might be willing to work and doesn't have the capability or the talent for that specific type of, or for any kind of that type of thing. You know, you can't split a job, I don't think, because one person is going to be better at it than the other, and people are going to want that particular person as opposed to the other person who's half sharing that job. That's my personal experience.
Well, personal it bears a lot of exploration, I think. It would be an interesting
situation.
Yes, topic.
I think it's the other side of the coin. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.